Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Polarize, the show where we talk about crazy topics and strange beliefs, weird people, and the kind of thoughts that keep you awake at night when you're home at 2 a.m. and the power goes out. The kind of things that divide people right down the middle. And that's what we're all about. And today, I'm joined again, of course, with Alex Knight over here, my partner in rhyme.
Welcome to the show.
All right, folks. So here today, we have an interesting thought that I had. Past few days as I've been moving. I was moving to Aldergrove today. It was a wonderful, wonderful time. And when you're up at 2 in the morning completely exhausted, you know, you have some odd thoughts that pop into your head. And I had this idea. I think people these days, especially in the intellectual community and people in politics and just, you know, folks in general, seem to think that the cold, hard, logical solution to life is always the best one. And my contention is that empathy is a far more practical solution. That's what this show is about. Empathy as a practical solution. Do you have any thoughts on that there, Alex?
I have plenty, but why don't you go first?
All right. So I want to play a couple of situations that I wrote out in my head there. I don't have any notes. I'm going right off the cuff here, guys. But so imagine that there's a situation where a person goes to the doctor. Now, the first doctor is very cold and very logical, very straight to the point, very, you know, in that sense of the word, just very cold and logical, best way to sum it up. And the other doctor is very empathetic, very invested in the person's well-being, people person kind of thing. Now, first situation, a patient goes into the doctor complaining of constant headaches and back pain, severe back pain. Doctor treats the symptoms, gives them medication, sends them home. That person happened to be extremely depressed and was suffering from mental illness. Didn't get notice, patient commits suicide. Other situation, empathetic doctor, same situation. The empathetic doctor would pick up on the telltale signs, the red flags, and they'd be emotionally invested into their well-being, and they'd be making sure that they were safe, making sure they couldn't go home and hurt themselves, and making sure they got the proper care. And it's practical, and it has the best long-term advantage, in my opinion. Or on a wider scale, we could apply it to, say, in political times and times of political unrest, or right now with the refugee crisis, or any time with a war-type situation. We're under threat of attack, threat of invasion, that kind of thing. And people say, well, the cold-hearted, cold logical way to do it is like, well, we have to protect ourselves. We have to defend ourselves. Maybe we have to do a preemptive strike. Maybe we should invade. We need to increase military spending. We need to get more people into the army. We need to take care of this before they kill us, that kind of thing. That's the cold-hearted, logical, direct way to do it. The empathetic approach. Why do they want to kill us? Why do they want to attack? Are they starving? Are they impoverished? Are they dead? Maybe we could work on that and they won't want to go to war. Idealist, I know, but why can't that be the norm? That seems like a much more practical way to handle things. And what I'm trying to get to is that people have this way of saying that emotion has no place in civil discourse, or arguing from emotion is fallacious. Well, I think when you want to exclude emotion from the situation, like, that's half of your mind, you know. This is half of your creativity, you know. Like, you got two hemispheres in your brain. And people want to leave emotions completely out of argumentation. Well, that just doesn't work very well. The cold, hard, logical way, when you're starving to death, tells you that eating the neighbors is a good idea. Can't get much more cold, hard, logical, and direct than that. The empathetic way would say, well, maybe we can work together and try to help each other, and maybe we'll get more food that way. You know, there's so many better ways to handle, or as the non-dickheaded approach ways, like how I like to say it. Well, Alex, I'm going off on a tangent. I think I've started the ball rolling here. What do you say? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, the first thing that popped into my head is, I guess I generally question, why is it that we don't approach things that way?
I think most people do, to be quite honest, in their day-to-day life. I just think when we all get together and start group thinking is when it gets to be a problem, when we're all trying to collectively decide things, you know?
Right, but my general experience and observation with individuals is that an overwhelming majority of people lack empathy in many aspects.
I see.
And it's a problem.
It's definitely an issue, but I think some of that might come from what we are as a society, you know. I don't want to overuse that a bit, but you know, if the people at the highest up aren't making empathetic choices and aren't living by those own examples that we are, as humans, are supposed to live by, how can we expect anyone else in the country to? If the people who represent us are just as scared and xenophobic, why would we think that they would handle anything differently? But I'm saying that I think the empathetic way is the best solution. I think it will you'll sow more seeds of goodness, you know. It will just, it'll benefits more. I mean, I just don't see how being paranoid and treating people badly just as like the default way is the right way to handle things necessarily. I think empathy has a lot of benefits, and I think that if we made an effort to do that more, I think we'd have a better place to live in. You know, starting by just little things, you know, like encouraging doctors to practice that. That would help us a lot, you know, getting that educators, encouraging educators to be more empathetic, you know, finding out why the child is having trouble at school instead of just blaming it on the child.
Right. So, like anything, I mean, you can't just make sweeping changes. As if we're talking about like society as a whole, you can't just make those kind of changes overnight. So, obviously we'd have to make baby steps, but I guess like, how do we even approach something? Cause this is really complex.
Well, I think the first step would be that our leaders, our political leaders would have to make a statement about it. They would have to start talking about it and treat it like a real thing. But I think that's going to be slow to start. I think they tend to label that as like liberalism, hippie talk, peacenik stuff. And I think that's a problem. Cynicism is a hard thing to fight against. And people I find are very cynical about stuff like that. They don't see much future in the human race. And I think that's very bitter.
So I'm just trying to think now, because I totally agree with what you're saying. I think it should start with people that are, you know, in a position of power that can start actually talking about that. But I'm just thinking, you know, even if maybe they think that's something important and worth talking about, I'm just thinking as a whole, as society, as individuals, what can we do? I mean, should we start writing to people in power and sharing our opinions about like, these are things that you should be discussing? I mean, is that how we get started?
Oh, I don't know if I'm the one to decide how we get started on that, but I don't think that would ever be a bad step. I've seen lots of benefits from calling my members of parliament and telling them what I think. Even if they don't listen, well, it's still good to get your voice out there. You have to try. They can't ignore everybody forever. And if they can, they won't last in office very long. They only work as hard as we make them work, you know? If we don't want to be involved, they'll get away with anything. And if you're looking for a practical way to start that, I think is empathy is a practical solution. Well, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I think anger management and teaching children how to handle their emotions should be part of the education system. That would be that's not a sweeping change, but it's a start. Make that a mandatory course in school. Start raising the next generation to be more empathetic. We might not be able to fix people in this generation, but we can always strive for a better future. And a good way to do that would be to start teaching children how to understand their anger, how to understand their hatred, how to not be ashamed of mental distress or mental illness, and how to seek help, that kind of thing, you know, and how to teach other kids in school to notice those red flags and those telltale signs and to, you know, get people involved, you know, more community type aspects, right. You know, looking out for each other, those kind of values. If we wanted to start simple, that would be a good way, I think, in my opinion, to start.
Absolutely. And I'm sure there are plenty of people that'll make the argument that, oh, there are so many more important things in this world that we need to, solve. Like, how do we solve the homeless issue? How do we starve? How do we solve the issue with people that are living in our country that, can barely make ends meet, that are starving perhaps, but I think honestly those issues are more complex, and I think it's more realistic that we actually do start with the simpler thing, which is, you know, just like you said, making these kind of courses mandatory in school. Like, this is something that we can easily implement today. Solving the homeless problem is a way more complex problem to solve. Solving the issue of how do we feed children in this country that can't afford to be fed. You know, I think that, you know, like you're saying, empathy as a practical solution is definitely something we can do now that's not going to cost us anything.
That's what I mean. It's like, seems like it'd be pretty easy to implement. I don't think you'd have a hard time finding teachers that'd be willing to back that. I've been thinking about calling the Teachers Federation, the Teachers Union myself, and asking them about that idea. Yeah.
Do you think this is something that people aren't even actively thinking about?
I don't know if I'm the smartest person in the world, but I don't think enough people are actively thinking about it. I just don't know if they see that empathy could be a practical solution. And that's why I'm trying to get this out there. I want more people to talk about it. I think that's the first step, is to say, well, why have we never talked about that? Why is it we don't see that as a practical solution to things? Why are we so quick to judge? Why are we so quick to condemn? And why are we so quick to, like, well, I'm sure there's a lot of people on the right-wing side of Canada that would be more than willing to turn down my idea without even giving it much more than a passing thought. Probably a lot of people on the left as well. But why is that? And I think that, like, that's the people's reaction. That's kind of case in point that we definitely have a lot of work to do.
Well, we absolutely have a lot of work to do. But thinking back about my personal experience with school, you know, it's something that I think it's kind of an afterthought. It does get discussed, but it's not getting discussed, I think, at the right time. It's only getting brought up with people that are maybe struggling and, you know, maybe they're showing signs of violence or they're misbehaving in class. And, you know, the school counselors will bring up that kind of stuff. But it's something that we should be thinking about at the early stages of like a child's development, I would think. And it's something that should be really at the forefront of our minds. And it's that to me says that it's just like we're thinking about it, but we're waiting until it's too late. And those lessons need to be taught at an early age.
Well, in that kind of spectrum of things, when I was in anger management myself, I have taken those courses and I'm looking forward to going back to a refresher course again because nobody's perfect. I've got my rage moments. But what I learned in that class is from the counselors themselves, and they said they took this course to a grade 12 graduation class one time. They thought that was a good idea to teach them about that. And all the kids in these courses apparently had the same reaction. You needed to teach us this sooner. Why are you waiting till now? Like, the damage has been done, that kind of stuff. You know, it's good to know, but as much as those courses have helped me, I have still made those mistakes already. Nothing will amend those mistakes. I can try to be more calm, more patient, more loving, more decent, more empathetic, more... it won't make up for the people that I've hurt in the past, though. And it won't make up for my past mistakes. Not serious mistakes, I guess, but I've still made people cry. I've hurt people's feelings, and it was unnecessary. It was because of my own rage issues. And I think if I've dealt with that, there's probably a lot of other street people out there that have struggled with that, too. And because their only crime is not understanding what most people in this world don't understand, our emotions and feelings, well, again, I want to help those people. I want to... Those people deserve that chance, that... ability to, you know, some people take those, how do I put this? It's like, you know, functioning in society, some people take that for granted that it's like everybody knows how to do that right off the bat.
Yeah.
Some people struggle. A lot of people struggle.
Well, you can't do anything about what's happened in the past. What's done is done. But
agreed.
I think you took a really great step, you know, actually being aware of like this, I understand like this is how I've been behaving. And like the fact that you're like self-aware of how you are prone to react to a situation, I think is a very good step. And I know that's probably something that's covered in anger management, I'm sure, as well.
It's a bit like being a self-aware alcoholic in a sense. It's like knowing that you're making stupid decisions doesn't right. necessarily stop you from making those stupid decisions. But yeah, it's a start. It's always a daily battle. For me, I have to take like 10 seconds and just rethink before I react, because if I react, I tend to really offend people.
Now, can you imagine if everybody on the planet actually took a moment to actually think before they reacted? How many problems would we not actually have?
I think the construction industry would work far more efficient than it ever has in history. Telling you that because they're
just, tell me more about that.
I worked in construction for a long time, and I got to tell you, some of the most reactionary, over the top, easily offended, emotional people you've ever met. No, that's obviously not. This is the generality I'm speaking of in my level of experience. I'm obviously not saying all construction workers are like that, but a good chunk of them I met, or if you want to talk about another anomaly as far as construction workers go, misogyny, homophobia, and all kinds of things like that. I did this game once. If you work on a construction site, you got to go to every single outhouse and count how many dick drawings you find. Because they're everywhere. And I've never met a group of men so impassionately homophobic and so obsessed with drawing phalluses in my entire life. They're everywhere. And some of them drawings weren't even that bad. But I think we have talked that issue pretty well. We'll probably breach back to it again. But I had another odd thought during the move that I thought I might bring up with you, Alex. Have you ever heard of sleeper agents?
Yes, I have.
Okay, so you're familiar with the concept then of hypnotizing someone through conditioning, mind control, and you get them to do something like that. For instance...
Makes a great plot for a movie.
Oh, it does. Like The Manchurian Candidate. Everybody likes that kind of stuff. And it's always been seen as this very, like, really far-out fantasy concept. And I'm not about to say that it's not a far-out fantasy concept. Now, the idea has always been, well, you cannot hypnotize someone into doing something they don't want to do. And that's the part that always got me. It's like, okay, well, I'm not sure if anyone's ever thought of this, but what if you hypnotized someone and did that conditioning to a mind that was comfortable with the idea of murder? Could you make someone do something they didn't want to do necessarily, or something they weren't willing to do just because they didn't see murder as necessarily a problem? Because it's all about how the mind reacts to the situation. If you're uncomfortable with the idea of killing, you can never make someone who's not comfortable with that idea do something they don't want to do. But if you were okay with it, could you be confused into committing a crime that you didn't necessarily want to do? Like, what if you're a psychopath and you don't see people that way, but you wouldn't necessarily act on that unless you were conditioned into it? Could that concept be possible? I don't know, but it blows my brain to try to think about something like that.
Yeah, that's certainly interesting. Yeah, I mean, when you say do something, you know, can you make someone do something that they're not willing or not even prepared to do, but like, are you talking about somebody who maybe would consider it under the right scenario or situation? Like, because I mean, I'm sure plenty of people, I mean, you can make the argument that anybody would be able to kill someone if given the right scenario. Like, you know, if a human being is pushed to the edge and it's about self-preservation.
Absolutely.
Would you be willing and able to take another life? And I think that's certainly an interesting question.
Well, that's not necessarily what I mean. I mean, that's a good point as well. But what I'm saying is, like, well, this goes back to empathy as well. Say, like, people who are psychotic might not have any empathy. So if empathy is what keeps you from committing that act, if you don't see a person as something valuable, but, you know, you're living in a society growing up in that, knowing the rules, you necessarily know you can't get away with that. But say that you combine that willingness to kill or that lack of caring about human life and combine it with hypnosis, conditioning, gun training, those, you know, CIA, mind control, MK Ultra, stuff like that. I don't want to get too much into the conspiracy theory, but I'm just talking about it as a concept. I'm not necessarily saying people are doing this. I'm not going all Art Bell or Alex Jones and anybody out there, in case you're wondering. But I just thought about the concept itself. Could that be possible? Could you turn someone into a killer that way? I mean, like the famous case of Sirhan and the execution of Robert Kennedy. You've heard about that, right? Well, Sirhan to this day claims that he was hypnotized and mind controlled, and the CIA set him up. And his trigger apparently was a woman in a blue polka dot dress. He was supposed to see that, and then someone was supposed to flick him on the ear, and that was his trigger. He was supposed to go into this marksman type conditioning type thing.
Yeah, but we're talking about somebody who's clearly delusional.
But he was already an unstable man to begin with.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I'm saying, but like, if you took that idea, is it necessarily that crazy that Sirhan could have been tricked into murdering somebody? Like I said, I'm not lending credence to the conspiracy theory. I'm just talking about the concept itself. Like, what if you could take someone, use that hypnosis, use that mind control techniques and these conditioning and drugs and stuff like that? Could you trick someone into thinking they were in a dream, maybe, to commit a political act like that? Or maybe not even a political act.
I don't have enough information to make a strong enough statement to really go one way, to or at least in the direction of believing that would be possible. I'll keep my mind open on that subject. It could potentially be possible, I would say.
Power of suggestion is pretty strong. I mean, it can make people do some pretty funny things. Now, that wouldn't work on everybody. Now, I have studied hypnosis a little bit, and I have hypnotized a few people in my time. It's a lot of fun, and everybody reacts to it differently. You can make people think they're hurting, and sometimes you can do all kinds of things. Now, it not necessarily means that hypnosis is a real thing. It just means the power of suggestion and manipulating people's susceptibility to the power of suggestion is real.
I'm glad you said that, because I think actual hypnosis is a load of BS.
Oh, yes. Well, that's the thing.
But I do agree with you, though. There are people who make it a profession who say they can actually hypnotize somebody, but what they're really doing is, through intense manipulation and suggestion, I'm sure you've probably heard of cold reading, right? You know, all that stuff. It's a technique.
The spirits want me to call someone with a name that starts with D. Oh my God, my Darren. Yes, yes, it's Darren. I'm hearing it very clearly now.
They're able to solicit just enough information in order to, you know, give the impression that they actually know something personal about you that you didn't actually divulge, or that you didn't think you'd divulge.
People like that John Edward character and other pricks of that general variety don't really impress me so much as people like Darren Brown and the amazing Kreskin. Because Darren Brown says that, I am just manipulating you, ergo the power of suggestion. Kreskin says, there is no such thing as hypnotism, but there is a such thing as the power of suggestion. I can make you believe you're being hypnotized, and I can put you in a trance, but it's not hypnotism. I'm just making you believe I can. My thought becomes more powerful than your thought. That's all it is. That's all mind control is, and that's what church is. That's what religion is. If you've ever been, I went to a Jehovah's Witness church one year for, oh no, I'm sorry, not Jehovah's Witnesses. I went to an, evangelist church at the Surrey Pentecostal Assembly one year, and it was for Christmas celebration, and they were doing the prayer thing, everybody bowing their head. And I've spent a good time learning about manipulation, power of suggestion, hypnosis, that kind of stuff, you know. And I was just noticing all these techniques being employed in the church. And it's a very common thing. Once you notice this, it's very easy to spot. The rhythmic music in the background, the preacher with the awe-inspiring voice talking very rhythmically into the microphone and telling people what they should think, who they are, what they believe. And people are so overcome by this that they're like crying, you know, the emotions are very real and what they're feeling is very real. But, you know, is it magic? No. Is it hypnosis? No. Well, what is hypnosis? If hypnosis is just manipulation of the power of suggestion, then hypnosis is real. Because, you know, you're just suggesting it, and they believe it. You can make people believe lots of things. And I just think it's a fascinating concept. I think it's maybe, if I've thought of this, some other crazy person has thought of this too. Maybe that's how MK Ultra started. Who knows?
Who is MK Ultra?
MK Ultra was this exposed plot by the U.S. government to manipulate the public and try to test mind control techniques using LSD, other types of psychoactive drugs, and really crazy batshit doctors were involved in this. A couple of them in Canada, they were...
Oh, this was the thing that happened in the 60s, right?
They
made videos about this.
Well into the 80s, and then it came out, and yeah, MK Ultra, that was a real thing, and the U.S. was called out in this. Of course, there was a lot of crazy rumors that came out of that. Like, have you ever heard of Polybius?
No.
Or Polybius? It's apparently this CIA MK Ultra mind control video game that turned people into suicidal murderers or something like that. It's just this giant pile of crap that came out of that MK Ultra thing. Apparently, Polybius is this strange arcade machine, and there were these seedy figures in black suits and white shirts and black ties that came in and they sprayed LSD into people's eyes, and then they played the game and they went insane.
You know, one thing that I always find fascinating is that when we are faced with something that we don't understand, it's easier to come up with the most overly elaborate scenario to explain it rather than oftentimes it is the most simplest.
You're talking about the Socratic method.
That's right in front of you.
Yeah, I usually as the Socratic method would suggest, and as what those greats like Carl Sagan, if you have two competing theories, go with the one that requires the least suppositions. Not necessarily the simplest. It can be complex, but the least amount of suppositions, the closest to reality that you can possibly get, the least amount of biases, the least amount of things that are dogmatic, you know, things that you can't question.
That's right.
And yeah, that's what the Socratic method is. People have a tendency to conflate that to mean, oh, Occam's razor, the simplest explanation is always the most often. No. The moon isn't made of cheese. That's a simple explanation. But, you know, thinking that the moon was created by God 6,000 years ago, that is a lot of suppositions. That requires a lot of crazy talk. That requires a lot of mental gymnastics to come to. It's fine if you believe that, just don't force your kids to.
Yeah, well, try explaining that to majority of the people that live in the world.
Yeah, as I said, that's why sometimes I agree what the majority wants isn't necessarily right, because if 60% of America doesn't want to teach evolution in schools, they can get fucked. I'm sorry, I don't care. You don't get to dictate what reality is. We do. No single person gets to decide that, oh no, see, I want my children to be taught the real story of creation. See, God created this universe 5,500 years ago. See, he said it, and bang, it happened. That's your Big Bang Theory right there. Yep. God just banged it. He banged it right into existence. He bangs a lot, actually. That's why the Catholic Church are always banging. They're just trying to lead by God's example. Okay, wow, I just went into way inappropriate territory here. No, I do not support the molestation of children. Damn you, Catholic Church. Not you Catholic people, but damn you, Catholic Church. International pedophile rings. Where exactly in the Bible does it say that God says, hey, bishops and cardinals, go forth and open up child prostitute rings? No, didn't happen.
Yeah, I missed that memo.
Yeah, I missed that too. And we kind of went spun off on a tangent here, but yeah, we don't do transitional material, as you can probably tell. We went from CIA mind control to talking about the Catholic Church. But now we're on that subject of patriarchy, this takes me into the latest bit of crazy, wacky, men's rights activism news, where we are taking you live to David Fittrell's site at wehuntedthemammoth.com, where they archive all the crazy that the internet has to offer relating to misogyny, misandry, if that were such a thing, and, of course, wacky, religious conspiracy theories, which we are going to start off with this one right here. I'm sure more than a few of you out there are aware of the Planned Parenthood attack, that terrorist attack that happened there by yet another right-wing white person in the States. Hey, side note on that, folks. Why is it that America can still be terrified of Muslim terrorists when the majority of terrorist attacks that have happened in the States have been by white, right-wing Christian people? Honestly. One of the most dangerous ones that ever happened, Oklahoma City bombings. Crazy, right-wing, gun-loving nutcase. Oh, and what a big shock. Same thing happens in Colorado at the Planned Parenthood building. This guy is your crazy, basic, run-of-the-mill, right-wing nutjob. Loves guns, lived in a shack in the woods. I mean, I hate to say that one as a stereotype, but there are an awful lot of right-wing people that would just love the concept of living in a shack in the woods, you know, living off beaver, sewing your own jackets out of pelts, that kind of thing, you know. My brother's not right-wing, but he loves doing that too. All right, so here we go. What do the crazy, wacky, right-wing Canadians and men's rights activists and men's rights advocates, it's hard to choke that word out there. So here we go from David Fittrell at We Hunted the Mammoth. I will read this to you right now. Right-wingers claim that the Colorado Robert Louis Deer is a dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun trans woman. Oh boy, stay with me here, folks, because it's about to get very rocky. So far, we only know bits and pieces about the strange and isolated life of Robert Louis Deer, the alleged shooter who murdered three people and injured many others after holding up in a Colorado Springs Planned Parenthood clinic yesterday afternoon. We know that he had numerous run-ins with the law and with his neighbors, and he was accused in the past of domestic abuse, and that he lived in a small shack in the woods. While Deer didn't leave behind a manifesto, the fact that he targeted Planned Parenthood seems to be rather large clue as to his motivations. Indeed, the mayor of Colorado Springs told reporters that he could make inferences about Deer's motivations from where the shootings took place. Meanwhile, NBC is reporting that Deer talked about abortion after he was arrested, making a reference to baby parts, according to NBC's law enforcement sources. Apparently embarrassed by the actions of yet another white male terrorist, some white ringers are trumping a bizarre claim that Deer is a trans woman. The claim seems to have originated with the blog... Let me try that again. The claim seems to have originated with the blog Gateway Pundit, which posted voter registration information for Deer that labeled the alleged shooter as female. That's right, folks. This entire conspiracy about this guy being a trans woman comes from the fact that someone made a mistake on his voting card. Oh my goodness, the crazy, rambling idiot wrote, like, he checked the wrong box? Oh my goodness. But, you know, that's usually enough for most people to go, well, that's just stupid. Like, who the fuck could possibly make a conclusion like that? You'd have to be, to make that kind of a non sequitur, you'd have to be a real chump. Well, that's all it takes for the wacky, religious, white wingers of the world. You know what I'm talking about? These men's rights activists decide to say something like this. And this is from a man, Rich Hoffman, who blogs as Overman Warrior. I'm going to do my Overman Warrior voice right here, as tough and as manly as these guys really appear to me in my mind.
Guess what, Obama? MSNBC CNN, Hillary Clinton, and all the rest of the knuckle-dragging losers of progressive politics, they thought they finally had a white middle-aged Republican man who committed a terrorist act so they could propose more gun control. Sadly for them, the shooter, the lunatic who shot up a Colorado Springs Planned Parenthood clinic on November 27th, appears to be a cross-gender-loving pervert who shared much more with Obama's LGBT community than the NRA-loving American traditionalists.
That is exactly what you guys sound like to me.
But Daddy, I have some comments. Mommy, Dad, why don't you take me seriously, Mommy and Daddy? Mom, well, you're probably Jews, aren't you?
Yeah, that's pretty much what it comes down to. All right, so yeah, they think that this person is a trans woman. Now, let's say for a second that this individual was. What does that prove? Does that mean that all trans people want to shoot up Planned Parenthood? Does that prove that, like, trans people want to own guns? Or what is this? What the fuck are they talking about? What the fuck are they talking about? That just makes no goddamn sense. Alex, what do you have to say about this? This is just, like, preposterous. This is nut job territory. It's craziness.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is. It's painting transgender people as the, you know, this group of, like, you know, evil miscreants. And that's just, it's so incredibly offensive and just wrong in every possible way.
And yeah, but you would think that right now, and it's about to get worse because now I'm going to read you the tweets of some of the people that were believing this craziness. Aurora from Aurora Stargazer. So the Planned Parenthood shooter was a trans woman, yet only straight white men commit mass shootings. Mel Doyle.
Democrats, trans.
Kaboom. Okay. Thomas Victor. Robert Louis Deere Jr. of Colorado Planned Parenthood murderer identifies as a ... woman. Again, what does this mean? What does that have to do with anything? That doesn't, even if that was the case, that wouldn't, what's their case?
It's completely irrelevant because even if this person was transgender, it has nothing to do with the crime.
It seems like you're just outing yourself as a bigot.
It could be
stuff like that.
The person that committed that, you know, heinous crime could be gay, they could be straight, they could be white, they could be, it's irrelevant. They committed a crime, and that's not the issue.
Like that shooter recently who happened to be homosexual, it's like, oh, and he was distraught, he was angry, and said he won, what does that mean, that being gay makes you a murderer? Of course not. It's a very minor detail. The act is what matters. Maybe their motivation behind it, yeah, but again, when it comes down to it, it's the murder that matters. It's the depraved act. The fact that he was a right-winging gun lover does paint a sad picture of right-wing media when they are literally acting like the Taliban media and creating terrorists. Like, this is the fact, like Fox News, for instance, is a voice box for the Republican Party in the States. Their shitty reporting is actually creating these crazy people. Their widespread paranoia. Now, I'm not saying it's going to turn people into murderers, but combine that with a paranoid mind and a penchant for guns, and you can push people over the edge very quickly. Now, again, that's not to say all guns are dangerous, but I don't think people who are mentally ill should be allowed to have guns.
Well, I think that's
clear. A no-brainer, right?
Yeah, it's obvious that that's the case.
For instance, here in Canada, I was put into a mental institution because I tried to kill myself. I'm quite comfortable with that fact. Look it up on my YouTube page, by the way, Tyler Street at YouTube. And it seems very fair to me that the government says you cannot even think about owning a gun for at least 5 years. And even then you have to go through that. Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. I am not offended by that law at all. Because there have been many times in my darkest days where if I had had a gun, I wouldn't have hurt anybody else. Not directly, but I definitely would have hurt myself.
I mean, I don't know if we have enough time to get into the whole gun law issue, which we might have to leave for another episode. But
oh, that's fine.
But just to quickly touch on what you're saying here, I've said it before, not on this podcast, but I firmly believe that you know, an overwhelming majority of people that own guns are responsible. Use them only in spaces where they should be using them, lock them up when they're not using them, etc. But I really do believe that there should be safety checks in place. There should be thorough background checks done on anybody Do I believe that owning a gun should be a right? No, I don't agree with that. But that's neither here nor there, because I know a lot, it's in the Constitution in the United States, and a lot of people believe that. Here in Canada, obviously, we obviously believe something completely different. And, you know, owning... The difference between the United States and Canada, as far as guns are concerned, is that in the U.S., owning a gun is a right. In Canada, owning a gun is a privilege. And that's really important.
The history of America is just repute with revolution and that patriotism in that regard, you know, standing up against an enemy and overcoming it, that kind of thing, you know. So naturally, I guess guns were a big part of that during the American Revolution. So naturally, it's a big part of their Constitution. It would make sense to draw those conclusions. But again, does that make it right? I remember I was watching It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and they were talking about the gun debate one time, and they summed it up pretty well. I was watching an episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia that touched on this quite well. They were talking about the gun debate, and one of the characters, Jack Kelly, said, "We don't need the government of today to tell us what to do, because the government of 200 years ago already did." And that's kind of the mentality. It's like, well, we already talked about it then, so why we should bring it up again? It's
we also believe that slaves were okay.
Yeah.
You know, so...
We also believe treating women like chattel was a good idea once upon a time. You know, we in Canada, we thought that, like, Native people didn't deserve the right to vote 40 years after we gave women the right to vote. Like, we've had a lot of bad ideas in the past. Maybe, just maybe, making owning a gun a right was one of them. Because what we get from the right wing people about that, like Alex Jones, he'd be saying something like, "Well, you know, just take away our guns, the government could go tyrannical and they would just destroy all of us." You think that assault rifle or an Uzi is going to stop the Bradley fighting vehicle? They have bombs. They have planes. They have tanks. You think you're going to take on the army with a pistol? Knock yourself out, Alex. I'll see you at the front lines. Oh, wait, you won't be there. You'll be inside your mansion with the rest of the upper-class dicks.
Did you just say mansion?
Guns. He has a mansion. And as he put it, he has 49 or 50 guns that are all loaded and placed precariously around his house. When he was making fun of Piers Morgan. I hate that prick Alex Jones, if you haven't noticed. I really don't like that guy. But I can do his voice pretty well, I gotta tell you, man. All you gotta do is pretend like you've been smoking cigars since you were 2 years old. My mother raised me on whiskey, and I am totally stable! Justin Bieber! Okay, I'm done. That was a nice funny part. I don't like that guy. He thinks Justin Bieber is a reptilian. The David Icke, among others, think that all the political parties are been infiltrated by this alien race of reptilian hybrids that parade around in human skin. Now, if this is sounding familiar to you right now, it's because it is. It's because it was done in the 70s. It was called V. It was this series about these aliens that came to Earth under the guise of peace, and they tore off their skin at night, and they were reptiles. I'm fucking serious. They based, like, this whole belief is based off of a movie that David Icke probably saw on LSD and thought, "Oh my God, someone's trying to tell me something." I know that wasn't a very good David Icke voice. I don't know what he sounds like. I think he's English, so he probably sounds like a bit of a prat. Not because he's English, just because he's not intelligent in English. David Icke, though, he's a card. He's a real pill. He's a Valium. He will put you right to sleep. And I believe he had a falling out with Alex Jones, but they both believe in reptiles. They both believe that the Bush family are reptiles, the Clintons are reptiles, Justin Bieber's a reptile. There are so many reptiles out there, and they look just like us. And their ultimate proof is that if you go online, you can watch these videos where their eyes change for a split second. And I just think of all the poor saps who sat at their computers watching these videos in super slow motion, just waiting for that bit of motion blur so they can say, "I gotcha, you fucker. I knew you were a reptile." Justin Bieber. Of course, it all makes sense now. You just have to forgo all rational thought and believe in the Jewilluminati. Or the Jew World Order. Why? Why do all these conspiracy theories go back to the Jews? Leave these fucking people alone, for Christ's sake.
That's a good question. I have no idea.
I do. I know why. Gerald Ford. No, Henry Ford. Sorry. Henry Ford, not Gerald Ford. That was a president. Henry Ford was, he was a firm believer in conspiracy theories, and there's this paper called the Orders of Zion, and it was this fake paper that was invented to incite violence against Jewish people. And Henry Ford took it to heart, and he printed out like thousands and thousands of copies of this, gave it out to all of his friends and all these people, and pretty much cemented these theories and these crazy anti-Jewish conspiracy theories in history. He was the one that gave it credibility. It was very much thanks to him handing out these papers on something about the, I can't remember the exact name, something about the Orders of Zion. If anyone else is listening out there, you know, look it up. Check it out. It's very fascinating. Henry Ford, on top of creating engines, he also did some pretty horrible things for society. But again, much like many people in the past, he thought it was for the good. He thought that he was like very much like people today who get caught up in those 9/11 conspiracy theories. They think they're doing a good thing. We've got to expose this to the world. We've got to tell other people about this because we're all being tricked. And I know the answer and no one else does. And I've got to tell them. It feeds into that paranoid thought that people have in their head, you know. For instance, I used to believe in the 9/11 conspiracy theories.
You can't be serious.
I'm serious.
Okay,
man.
Let's talk about this. We've got about 15 minutes left. So
I used to believe in those 9/11 conspiracy theories because, just like everyone else, I am prone to believing stupid shit.
Well, I think that goes back to what we were talking about earlier, right? About believing the
power of suggestion.
It's just like believing the most overly elaborate, complex, ridiculous thing to what was probably just, you know what, it was just a terrorist attack. There was no conspiracy.
And that's what I came to the conclusion of. It's like, and now what I say to these people now, it's like, is that not enough of a conspiracy to you? That people managed to infiltrate the United States in a very, very simple and elegant way. And whenever I talk to people about that, now that I'm on the other side of that, and I tend to move towards rationality, they say things like, what, you think Afghani goat herders could pull off something like that? And it reminds me of that old, like, ancient proverb about never underestimating your enemy. And that's what they do, I think, these 9/11 conspiracy theories. They don't see it as possible that a small country or someone insignificant across the world could say, oh, they could never do that because they're stupid. So you are so racist. You are so dumb. You're underestimating. It's like you don't think that they can't come up with an elegant plan. You think that if a Muslim shaves their beard, they won't look just like a regular American? You think they stand out in public like that? You know, no, it's scary to look at the truth like that and to see how vulnerable you can be. And I think, again, goes back to fear. And some of these people are pretty empathetic and they think they're doing the right thing and they want to help people, which is why. But again, when you've been invested into it for a long time, you don't want to admit that you've been duped, which I think is why a lot of people stay in Scientology and other religions, even after you find out it's bunk. Well, I've invested so much time into this, I really don't want to believe this is not true. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's confirmation bias. You have these reasons for believing it, and you don't realize that you have these reasons for believing it, you know? And I got sucked in. I saw the Loose Change video, and looking back on it now, after learning what I've learned about logic and critical thinking and that kind of stuff, I would have never been taken in by such fluff. It seems to me as plausible as the Flat Earth Society. But then I didn't know. And if you watch something that heightens your emotions up and it gets you really, really involved, then it makes you think that you're a person who has a piece of information that no one else does. You have cracked the code. You're somebody. You're important. It can give meaning to a stagnant life. It can make you feel very scared. It can make you feel very important. It can make you feel like you're part of something. And I think a lot of people are looking for that in this world, and that's what drew me to it. What drew me out was critical thinking.
Now, how did you get there?
How did I get there? I just watched the video, and I thought I saw the pattern, you know? And that's what they try to show you in those conspiracy theories.
No, what I mean is, how did you get to critical thinking?
You
didn't just
thinking.
Wake up one morning and suddenly...
Well, getting drawn to that conspiracy theory made me look into a lot of the things that the other side had to say. And that led me to question a lot of things when I found out I was wrong about that. I started questioning the concept of God again for a long time. I hadn't thought about that for a very long time. I got lost into that spirituality. You know, because I think George Carlin was right. Spirituality is the last resort of a desperate person looking for meaning in their life. And that's where I was at that particular point, you know, and that looking at the fact that, okay, the 9/11 conspiracy theories were based in bullshit. Okay, how many other things have I been sucked in on? And it makes you reexamine things, you know. When I was a kid growing up, my dad didn't believe in evolution. So that kind of made me not believe in evolution. Now, not to say that we were creationists or my dad was a creationist. He got duped. It's okay. It happens. And yeah, my dad's not completely 100% on evolution now, but he's now learned more about it because of that, because of me questioning that. And yeah, he's not sold, but he doesn't have to be sold. I don't really care. I just want him to know. And that's what he did. Do you have any more final thoughts on these subjects?
No, I think that's it for this week, unless you had anything else you wanted to add.
Well, I would like to add that if anyone out there has any ideas for any topics they'd like to hear us talk about, or any arguments they'd like to make against us, or if you just want to leave like some hate mail in the folder and say, hey, Tyler, you know, you sound like Will Arnett, or hey, Tyler, you don't sound like Will Arnett, or hey, Tyler, I'd like to know your address so I can throw a rock through your window. You know, that kind of thing. You know, if you have anything you want to say out there, people, we would love to hear it. We would love to know what topics you want to hear, if you're even out there. I'm talking to all three of you right now. All three of you.
Maybe somebody wants your address because they just want to send you flowers.
That could be. You know, flowers with poison. I like that, too. It's very creative. I saw that in a movie once.
Well, you've been listening to Polarized on Hologram Radio. This is episode 2, and we are not yet published on iTunes. We're just waiting for approval. If you are listening now, thank you very much for subscribing to the RSS feed. If you'd like to send us feedback like Tyler was just talking about, we actually have an email address. It is polarized@hologramradio.org. That's polarized@hologramradio.org, and hopefully by next week at episode 3 we'll be on iTunes, and you lovely people will be able to leave us a review on iTunes. Hopefully positive, but hey, if you got something negative to say, something that's maybe grinding your gears, do send us some feedback.
Hey, if we divided you down the middle, we want to hear things from all sides.
Exactly. Well, that's what the show's about.
We want to hear all the nuances in between, too. It's all about that. I don't just want enemies and friends here. I want all people from all walks of life. And if I could plug this for a little bit, if you want to donate to the show because you like what you hear and you want to make sure that Alex's cats are fed the ultimate and finest chicken that the, you know, the Canadian food and beverage industry can provide, you know, go on, pop us a donation. Doesn't have to be too much, and I'm not going to beg for it that much, but if you let me get on my knees, I could. Okay, I'm getting on my knees.
Yeah, this show's entirely listener-supported. If you would like to support the show, you can do that by going to hologramradio.org/donate, and we would appreciate it very much.
All right, well, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. It's been fun. It's been great. And my final thoughts for the evening shall be, I'm so glad I'm me.